Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. We have an interesting mix of stories on the show. Later, we'll hear from ISU's Science Bound, an organization which supports underrepresented students who are going into science, math, and engineering fields. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary, and we'll hear about the important work that they've been doing. But we start off with Ames Progressive Alliance. They're bringing us an update, their monthly update, on various initiatives that they have been working on. So I will turn it over to Victoria Sapinski and Ann Kinzel, and they'll introduce their guest. Thanks for being here for your monthly segment.
Oh, thank you, Gail. It's great to be here. Victoria and I are really pleased to do our monthly radio show on behalf of the Ames Progressive Alliance. This morning, we'd like to welcome John Kloss. We're so glad to have you here, John, as we work to introduce our community to the Ames Progressive Alliance, as we work to make our community a more progressive and welcoming city.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
It is early in the morning, and we certainly appreciate you coming out. Today, we want to discuss how the Ames Human Relations Commission has taken the lead in working with communities of color in Ames to make Ames a more progressive, diverse, and welcoming community. On July 14th of this year, the APA co-sponsored an evening with the Ames BCC Church, and the evening was focused on starting discussions between members of the Ames community, and it was focused on improving interactions between people of color in Ames and the police department. In addition, our August 2016 radio show featured a discussion with Malik Burton and Julian Neely, both Iowa State University students, Dr. Anthony Jones of the Ames Middle School, Pastor Robert Knight of the New Birth Baptist Church, and Chuck Shykos, chief of the Ames Police Department. Discussions went well, and there was quite a turnout that evening. But with John's input and that of others, it seemed that further discussion should be sponsored by the Ames Human Relations Commission, and we want to know what's been going on there.
Well, I'm going to take it up first and say that John is the chair of that committee, but has a very involved history with our community. So I just would like for you to talk a few minutes about who you are. John served as the city attorney here in Ames for many years, and maybe you could just tell us a little bit about.
Okay, well, I came to Ames in 1972 from Des Moines. I was born in Carroll, Iowa, but I worked a couple of years in Des Moines in the city attorney's office there. And then a position opened up here in Ames. And at that time, the city council had an African-American member, Russell Pounds. Some people may remember Russell Pounds. And he was working in Des Moines with the Model Cities program, which is one of the things I worked on. And so we got to know each other slightly, and it was suggested to me that maybe I should apply for that position in Ames. And so I did, and was hired. It's been a great opportunity. It's been a long association, almost 34 years as city attorney, and a lot of changes and a lot of developments. And one of the things that we did during that time was adopt a human relations ordinance, which is now patterned almost verbatim for the state civil rights statute. But it didn't start out that way. It started out rather modest. And it was called the Human Relations Ordinance because in 1974, I believe it was, there were still people who got a little upset when you used the term civil rights, because they associated it at that time with people who were saying uncomplimentary things about the country they loved. And so we used human relations, and that term is stuck. So now, ironically, I'm chair of the Human Relations Commission, and we are kind of going through some changes. You know, the civil rights statute in Iowa has to do with defining prohibited practices to prevent discrimination, and it's very legalistic. It has defined terms and a very defined process as to how allegations are made, how they're proven, how they can be conciliated, and all of that. And that's something that we at the Ames Human Relations Commission have done from time to time, but we get relatively few complaints to be handled in that way. And many that we do receive are sent up to the state through a referral process. So what we're really focusing on now and have increasingly wanted to focus on is a mandate that we have in our ordinance to, quote, undertake projects of education to prevent discrimination. And so that's what we're really trying to focus on more than, and more. So when the Ames Progressive Alliance organized with the assistance of Pastor Storen at the Body of Christ Church, a really remarkable community conversation on race relations. I participated, and ultimately, it occurred to us that there had to be some sort of next step from that. And the Ames Progressive Alliance sent a letter to the Ames Human Relations Commission challenging the commission to take that next step. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was appropriate, and the other commissioners agreed. And so the next step was presentations we had at the Ames Public Library and at the Pioneer Room of the Union on October 18th, where we had representatives of the Civil Rights Commission or staff, as Iowa Civil Rights staff, describe their processes and the statute, just to kind of lay the groundwork for what the law is and how that law works. And so that's one step, and we have some more steps on the horizon.
John, I just have a question. You said that the gathering, the initial gathering, was a remarkable gathering. And I'm curious as to why you thought it was remarkable. What made it stand out in your mind?
It stood out because, first of all, it happened very quickly. As someone who's been engaged in organizing events for one thing or another, things don't usually happen that quickly. So there was obviously a lot of passion to have that conversation. And the church, the Body of Christ Church, opened its doors to have that community conversation. And I think that's remarkable. Thinking back, a number of years ago, we had other community conversations on the matter of race relations when there was some tension developing when housing projects closed in large cities and there was an influx of African-American people to Ames. And there was some feelings of what's happening here. Why is this happening? What does this mean for us? And we had kind of a hard time as a city in making connections to the African-American people who were coming to our community. So when Torrin Smith, who has an integrated church, I should make mm-hmm. clear, opened his doors for us to have a dialogue between members of our community who are people of color, it was a remarkable thing from my perspective because we had encountered difficulties in doing that before. So it was
Victoria,
a good opportunity.
Great. You were there, Victoria. What were your impressions?
Well, and I would say that part of that evening for me and others that I spoke to was that it didn't have to be a concrete action that came out of that evening, but what was important was just meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
I made some new friends and acquaintances that I would not have had the opportunity to engage with if that evening had not occurred. And so the challenge for me and others is to maintain those relationships and to broaden them and to figure out, we don't all have to be best buddies, but we need to understand each other and know each other when we pass each other on the street, because I think that's one of the first steps to making sure that we don't have things occur in our community that we've seen happen around the country. We're trying to be proactive with this.
Mm-hmm. I attended the meeting as well. I think I was struck by the obvious sincerity and openness of all the people there to listen to each other. And frankly, a lot of members of our community had to listen to things that they had perhaps lived blissfully unaware of and were challenging mm-hmm. to them. But I think it was very successful. tell us a little bit about those meetings you had, John, at the MU. And
well, the meetings at the MU were, as I tried to explain, just about the statute and the processes, and they were fairly mechanical. We had about, you know, we had about 15 people at the public library and about 40 in the pioneer room. And when I say mechanical, it was about the nuts and bolts of the civil rights investigation process, and how you establish the evidence, and how the process of reconciling it or failing to reconcile it and going on to a hearing, how that all works. And and that's all well and good, because I think people need to know that that's protecting their civil rights. But the downside of that is it was mechanical. And civil rights are defined by statute. And you ask, well, you know, what is a civil right in Iowa? Well, it's what the chapter, the civil rights chapter of the Code of Iowa says it is. And so you have a right to not have a prohibited practice occur to you. So it's a little negative. But there's a bigger challenge facing us, I think, and that is to have a culture and attitude that that you know fosters community, and so that people do not feel that they are marginalized because of their race or their sexual orientation or religious beliefs or non-beliefs. And so that's the challenge, I think, that the Ames Human Relations Commission is trying to take up, to not be so mechanical, to try and find ways to get a community conversation going that can lead to a better, improved culture in our community. When, you know, when people are outside of the mainstream of events because they feel like somehow they're not welcome, that's really a drag on the community. And so that's something we need to overcome.
Well, you know, John and I are both lawyers, so we like that stuff, you know. So maybe you don't anymore, John. I kind of miss it sometimes. But it's interesting because statutes define things quite with certain precision and stuff. And what we heard from the young ISU students was about some of these what they called microaggressions. And I've always wondered, how does that fit in to the statutory scheme?
Well, you don't find that term in the civil rights statute. In fact, that's a new term to me. I mean, it's a term I hadn't heard till this year. But I can imagine what it probably is from conversations I've had with African-American people of color. And sometimes it's just a way in which someone will say your name when you deal with them in a commercial establishment. I think that I have a memory of that from when I was in the military service in Vietnam. There was a black officer and a white officer from the Deep South. And the white officer from the Deep South had a certain way of using the black officer's first name, stating it in just a certain intonation. It was different. Yeah. And would that be a microaggression? It is in my mind, you know. Hmm. But those are the kinds of things that are difficult to identify mechanically and say, thou shalt not do this, because it's hard to find the words to describe what's happening, but you know something is happening. And that's what we're kind of trying to work on. It's a heck of a challenge. We don't really know what we're doing or how to do it, but I think it's worth trying.
Well, yeah, it could make our community a better place.
So what is what are the next steps that the Human Relations Commission, have there been any discussions about where we go next or topics that would like to be focused on?
The Human Relations Commission, like people who generally don't know what they're doing but are wanting to do something, we're opportunistic. And we have an opportunity now from being offered by the public library. They're working on trying to develop a conversation with an author, Ta-Nehisi Coates. Some people know of him. And this is a work in progress. It will involve small group discussions, a discussion of the book, a presentation by the author. Sometime, hopefully, in January.
I believe it's January. I'll have to check my notes. January 30th that ISU Lectures is bringing him to campus.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if you're aware, John, but yesterday there was an incident at ISU involving the placement of posters with a sort of strong anti-immigrant, nativist bent, and they were placed on areas of the campus where posting is prohibited by university regulation.
Right.
Does the Ames Human Relations Commission have any involvement with those kind of campus issues?
Well, we will. It came up during the meeting. I had not heard of the incident, but I learned of it during the Civil Rights or the Human Relations Commission meeting yesterday afternoon. And we had just finished about an hour and 45-minute conversation with Chuck Sykes, the chief of police. And I was ready to move on to another item on the agenda where we monitor what's happening on social media. And somebody pointed out that this was on social media. Mm-hmm. And so we were quite concerned with that. I can't quote what the signs say. Maybe you can. I can't remember exactly what they say. I remember one of them said something like, in the 1950s, 90% of our America were white.
I have them here if you... Yeah.
Okay.
It says, in 1950, America was 90% white. It is now only 60% white. Will you become a minority in your own country? And there's a symbol there, which a student who's taking rhetorical analysis told me yesterday is an older symbol, but that's been reappropriated by white supremacy groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one said, white students, you are not alone. Be proud of your heritage.
So anyway, what is the first poster is probably the most explicit because it clearly is premised on the notion that this is a white country and that we're somehow in the process of losing it. And that's not a premise that can be relied on because this country has always had people of a variety of races and religious convictions. And, the founding document says all men are created equal. So we are not happy about that. And it is one more manifestation of something that we had to deal with, and I don't know how well we dealt with it. When the bike night had someone bending Nazi symbols and Confederate flags. These things are, I think, a symbol, a kind of speech, and so they are protected as a civil liberty. But the anecdote for hateful speech or speech that encourages discrimination and marginalization of others, the antidote for that is more speech.
Yes.
So we need to come up with programs and activities that don't let those kinds of statements go unchallenged. And so that's what we're going to be working on. And like I said, we don't quite know how we're going to get this done, but we know what we have to do. So
well, it seems like there's a real opportunity at ISU to begin a more focused dialogue on race relations on campus, but also to visit maybe some free expression, free speech types of rules. The university certainly has the right to limit speech in certain time, place, and manner and require that posters be placed in certain places on campus. But there is the question as to whether people have the right to make those kind of statements in areas that the university allows for free speech. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity in the months ahead, I think, to start discussing some very important American principles at the university. And their students are here to learn, so perhaps this will be a good thing. What do you think, Victoria?
Just how we differentiate between civil rights and civil liberties, and your civil liberty is freedom of speech. And I love the way that you said, and that gives us the opportunity to challenge it with more speech. So it sounds like the Human Relations Commission has a full plate, and it keeps being...
Right. And this kind of tension probably goes back a long time in our country. If you read history, you know that there's always been this undercurrent of tension between races and creeds. But that doesn't make it right. we have to speak out for what for the higher standard that we've all bought into, and that's the challenge: finding the right words in the right place, and you know, try to find some way that you can actually emphasize with the people who are engaging in this sort of thing. They have a need. There's something that's driving them to this. I don't think people are born evil, but somehow they've gotten to the point where they feel that they need to kind of jerk the chain of our culture and, you know, disturb us. Why? Maybe they just enjoy doing that. But I think more deeply, I think there is some perception that the currency of their whiteness is no longer as valuable as it once was, and they resent that. So that's something we have to talk about.
Well, and I really appreciate that you're one of the people that's on that commission. You bring a rich history and understanding to all of these issues. And as I said when you walked in the door today, these programs go by so quickly, and there's so much more that we always want to talk about. And I did start out asking you about who you were and your background, because you and your wife, Carolyn, are both involved in so many things in this community, League of Women Voters, variety of political activities. You were one of the founding members of the Ames Progressive Alliance. And also as a member of the Alliance, you are our representative with the newly formed, well, within the last year, Housing Trust Task Force. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could just give us a quick update on where that entity is at this point in time.
Well, it's a work in progress. Probably the impetus for this came through the AMOS group, a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy Group, because they've always been concerned about making housing affordable to all the people, decent, safe housing affordable to everyone in our community. But this foundation, the foundation is actually to meet a statutory requirement in Iowa and out to obtain the benefit of state and federal funds to assist programs for developing affordable housing. You need to have such a foundation in place. And then the grants of HUD money coming through the state goes to this foundation. Why Ames hasn't had one of these sooner, I don't really know. But we found out that we don't have one and we need one. And so that process is underway, and I'm on a committee for that. And we have now organized a nonprofit corporation, adopted bylaws, and have policies and procedures with respect to the foundation. But there's work ahead. Now we need to obtain the nonprofit's status, and then the heavier lifting of all, and that's finding out where the funds are going to come for the local match. Because to qualify for the state and federal money, we need to raise a 25% match locally. So that will be an interesting conversation, I think one that we're prepared to, as a community, prepared to have. And our next meeting will be December 10th, and we'll see what transpires then. It's a countywide effort. We have representatives from Ames and Nevada and Story City and Huxley and the university and the city. And it won't happen overnight, but we're definitely going down the road now. So this will take place.
There was an action. I mean, I was so impressed with that meeting that was organized by Amos and in particular Jan Flora. You know, you go to a lot of things. There's a lot of discussion about what the problem is and maybe the details of it. But this meeting ended with an action. Who's right. going to be on this committee?
Right.
And I would think many of us should keep that in mind on how one actually creates change and makes things better.
That's right. Speaking of action, when does the Human Relations Commission meet regularly?
It meets the fourth Thursday of every month. The time of day has fluctuated somewhat. Right now it's 5:30 p.m.
And this is at City Hall?
It's in City Hall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And the Ames Progressive Alliance also continues to be involved in I mean, jumping back to talking about race relations and making sure that we're moving forward, that's not just something we've turned over completely to Human Relations Commission. We all want to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, the APA will remain a part of that conversation, and one of our members has been designated as liaison to APA, Heidi Thompson, and she's had conversations and will continue to have conversations, and we hope to have the representatives of the APA attend one of our meetings not too far down the road, and so we can have a little more formal on-the-record conversation.
Yeah. And part of the reason we do this program is because we also want to encourage people to be in contact with us and be involved. This isn't just us telling what we're doing. It's encouraging broad participation.
Yeah, we've had an amazing array of guests this summer. We've discussed issues of race, of disability, of literacy in the schools. And today we've had John bringing us up to speed on what's happening with the commission. So I think we're stimulating quite a bit of discussion in our community.
Yes, and there are a few things that we are ongoing that I'd like to give a couple updates on. And one of them is our interest and our collaboration with the Ames Community Solar Initiative. There is a meeting coming up that is quite critical with URAB, which is the board that advises the city's electrical department, and that will be on November 1st at 4 o'clock at City Hall, room to be determined. There have been many discussions about net metering, which is too complicated to go into and probably taking up too much time, and that's
it's
my...
It's not that complicated.
And, well, yeah.
It's too complicated for this time of the day.
And my editorial comment is that it's probably taking up too much time in many other parts of other days, too. But more importantly, in this meeting, to my thinking, would be the conversation about the next step with the community solar project. And we were actually thinking about doing a whole show about it, but because this meeting is coming up, we're going to delay having that more involved update. But three options on the financial models were presented to the city by a man named Tom Wind, who had been hired to do a study. And he presented that there were three options of various models. URAB will be reviewing those at this November 1st meeting and then making a recommendation to City Council. This is a critical point in moving forward. We'll then be looking for the next step. We'll be putting out an RFP if, in fact, the model of having an outside entity to build the solar farm, solar array is chosen. There are marketing things that will be happening. Also, the location and questions about whether it's something people have to see or not see. And, you know, those are minor details, but they seem to also be part of the conversation.
Well, the bottom line is that we hope that people who are interested in seeing our city move towards solar as a form of generating electrical energy, please come to the meeting on Monday, on November 1st at 4 p.m. at City Hall, and get some skin in the game and help us move this forward.
I will mention at this point in time that you're tuned to KHOI Community Radio 89.1, and this is Local Talk and the monthly opportunity for the Ames Progressive Alliance to participate. Today we've been discussing the Human Relations Commission with John Klaus and also getting an update on the Community Housing Trust Fund and what the Ames Progressive Alliance has been involved with in the solar initiative here in Ames.
And I want to thank the KHOI Radio for sponsoring and helping us with this show, and I encourage everybody in our community to participate with KHOI and, more importantly, contribute to their continued success.
I'm also going to add, as everybody knows, but it's very important that November 8th is election day. So that's something that we're about also, is encouraging people to be involved in government at all levels. Particularly, we're looking at the Board of Supervisors and hoping people are paying attention to that.
And people can vote early, so they,
yes,
that's something you can do over the weekend if you choose. But thank you to all three of you, Anne, Victoria, and John, for being here today and filling us in on this work around race relations that you've been doing in Ames. It might be a good time to share with our listener that there's something related to this going on tomorrow. There is a conversation about social justice and the criminal justice system. It will take place at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship on North Highland from 9 to 1 on Saturday, and it's open to the public, and they've got a lineup of speakers that include attorney Tom Newkirk, Daniel Spikes, a professor from the School of Education at ISU, speakers from the NAACP, American Civil Liberties Union, and Amos. So that's going on tomorrow if people want to continue this conversation. Thank you for being here, and we're going to take a little musical break.
Well, they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're getting ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble out on the promenade, and the gambling commission's hanging on by the skin of its teeth. Well, now everything dies, baby, that's a fact. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Well, I got a job and tried to put my money away, but I got debts that no honest man can pay. So I drew what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that Coast City bus. Everything dies, honey, that's a fact. And maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, put your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlanta City. It's getting cold. Maybe everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. I've been looking for a job, but it's hard to find. Down here it's just winners and losers, and don't get caught on the wrong side of that line. Well, I'm tired of coming out on this losing end. So honey, last night I met this guy, and I'm gonna do a little favor for him. Well, I guess everything dies, maybe that's a bet. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Is your hair up and nice? Is yourself up pretty?
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That was Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen that you just heard. And I'm not sure why I chose that song for today, but something about it reminds me of this rather bizarre election season we're having. So I played Atlantic City for our listeners to puzzle over and figure out what the connection is. I've been joined in the studio by Dr. Connie Hargrave. She's associate professor in the School of Education at ISU and also the director of Iowa State's Science Bound, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Hargrave.
Sure, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So let's start by just telling us, what is Science Bound?
Sure. Well, Science Bound is a program designed to prepare students of color in Iowa at the pre-college level to pursue careers and degrees in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So we begin by identifying students at the end of seventh grade who have a propensity for math and science. And we work with them from eighth grade all the way through high school. And the students who complete the five-year commitment and the program requirements earn a four-year tuition scholarship to the university, to Iowa State, to study in a science-related field.
And what are the other requirements that they have to meet?
Sure. Well, they have to have a minimum grade point average every semester of a 3.0. They have to enroll in the college prep courses. They have to participate in 75% of science-bound activities every semester. So one of the key activities that they do, they meet every week after school, like a club at their high school, and there are science-bound teachers. There are teachers in each school that we work with who are also leaders of the science-bound program. So in those sessions, they do hands-on science activities. They maybe have a guest speaker in from a corporate area. They create science fair projects. So they do a whole host of things along that line. The high school level, they also visit Iowa State four times a year, and we call those science-bound Saturdays. And they come to the university on a Saturday, and we give them the opportunity in small groups to visit some of the best labs and some of the most interesting research that's happening on campus. So they get the opportunity to interact with faculty, graduate students, some of the scientists who are involved in anything from the tornado simulator to the virtual reality application center to the Center for Non-Destructive Evaluation. There's a whole host of some of the most interesting science activities that are science research that's going on campus. And then the high school seniors or the high school students also have to give a formal presentation every year, a 3 or 4 minute presentation where they have to justify their continuation in the program. So they have to demonstrate what they've learned, what they've gained, where they're headed, and then also account for their engagement in Science Bound and their engagement in school. So, and they have to do a summer program. So it doesn't have to be our program, but it has to be a summer academic development or career exploration program.
Wow. You keep them busy and they keep you busy, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how many students are you roughly serving now at the high school level, and how many communities and schools?
Sure. So we are in three communities, and we are in seven high schools. So we're in Denison and Marshalltown, each mm-hmm. of which have one high school. And we're in Des Moines at the five comprehensive Des Moines Public Schools high school.
High schools.
And we are in 12 middle schools. So the middle schools in those three districts. We have, at the high school level, we have a little over 300 students. And we have just under 100 eighth graders.
Why do we need Science Bound? So
that's a good question.
Yeah.
In fact, some people wonder.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons that we need Science Bound is because we have disproportionate numbers of students, of professionals who are from ethnic groups other than white ethnic groups and Asian ethnic groups, even though the Asian ethnic groups are still there's still some underrepresentation. Mm-hmm. But we have really there's not enough people who are African-American, Native American, Latino, who are in STEM careers. And so what we need to – so Science Bound's goal is to increase that. so that there are more African-American scientists and engineers and more Latino scientists and engineers and more Native American scientists and engineers. And we really need that as a society because there's a different level of – there's a different type of innovation and creativity that comes from every culture, and we need that diversity in our technical workforce.
So it would be better for society overall and also better for individuals to give them these opportunities. So it kind of works on both levels.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to that why question. So why do you think there's this underrepresentation?
Well, you know, if we look historically, the people who were encouraged, first of all, who were allowed to be in scientific fields and those who were encouraged to be in those fields were not people of color. They were also quite often not women, but those groups were first legally denied mm-hmm. opportunity and then through social policy also denied or discouraged from pursuing those opportunities. And so this, in essence, is Science Bound is designed to help us address that and do the encouraging. Creating the social policy and the social norms that encourage students of color, in this case, to go into technical fields.
And so how do you measure your success?
Absolutely. That's an excellent question. So one of the ways that we measure success has to do with our student retention. So, I mean, we're asking students at 13 years old, we're asking students and their families to make a 5-year commitment. Now, if you think about it, most young people don't make a 5-year commitment to an athletic team. You join football or basketball in 7th grade. You don't have a 5-year commitment. That's to continue playing. But that's what we're asking them to do at 12 and 13. We ask them to make a 5-year commitment. And also, during that time period, we're trying to influence and expand their interests in these areas, and their exposure to science careers and technology and engineering disciplines and as well as mathematics.
Tell us a little bit about what kinds of supports and activities they're involved in then once they get to ISU.
Sure. So when they come to Iowa State, for the students who complete the 5-year obligation and fulfill all the commitments of the program, they get the offer to come to Iowa State on a tuition scholarship to study in a STEM discipline. Mm-hmm. And so when they arrive, we have certainly the Science Bound office, and we have some program coordinators in place to assist them with the transition to college. We offer a seminar for the first-year students, and then we have study space in the Science Bound offices for them to – just a place to sit down, work on your work, do your homework, maybe interact with some other students in Science Bound. Then we have some social things that we get young people together, just so that they have some connections with their other Science Bound peers on campus. Then we also offer a series of workshops around career fairs and resume development and helping to choose and refine your career path. Particularly in college, so that you're thinking early on about what are the key summer experiences that I need to have and how do I get from a freshman in chemical engineering to a job interview and then a job at someplace like Dow Chemical.
Impressive array of things that you work with them on.
So one of the things that's so going back to how do we measure our success, it's their retention through the 5 years. So right now, we retain right at about 50% of the students who join in 8th grade will finish the 5-year commitment. Of those students who finish the program, 100% will finish high school. So that's a very mm-hmm. good thing. 97% will go on to college immediately after high school, and 80% of those will go to a 4-year school. Not all of the students choose to come to Iowa State. Mm-hmm. About 60%, and that number's been building, choose to come to Iowa State. Others, they go to a whole host of schools. They might go to They might go to a community college and then transfer into Iowa State, which they will still qualify for their scholarship. Or they might go to a private school. Some go to some of the Ivy League schools. Some go to the historically black colleges and universities or the Hispanic serving institutions. So it's kind of an array of where the students land. But, you know, the key thing is that they land when they complete the program, they're motivated and prepared to earn a post-secondary degree.
That's impressive. Yeah. So when you talk about underrepresentation of certain racial and ethnic groups, you often in STEM fields or just in university in general, will often talk about campus climate and how they're received when they get to campus. Is that something that you work on and try to support students and also faculty around?
Sure. You know, we primarily work with the students through ScienceBound, and that is an issue. It's a little bit of a shock for our students. Sometimes what happens is they come from school environments that are much more diverse than they are here at the university. And so in part what happens is it's a little shocking for our students to be the only person of color in a class of 60 students.
Right.
And so that's we work and talk through a little bit some of the transitions with that. They're not always – I don't think that they're always – a variety of students have a variety of experiences across the college experience. So, for example, whether it's in a class or walking across campus or the clubs that they feel comfortable joining or a life on the residence hall floor. So really helping them navigate and negotiate how do I find my place and my fit in this larger university community? So we do work with them on those sorts of things.
Yeah, I would think that would be an important kind of need that they might have. Where does your funding come from?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So we have really a mix of funding. We have some university funding. That's probably what I call the backbone of the program in terms of our staff support and office and facilities. Mm-hmm. The pre-college components are really supported by each community and funding from various corporations or foundations in the respective communities. So a big support for the Denison program is Smithfield Foods, which is a meatpacking plant in that community.
Right.
And so they really pay the lion's share of the pre-college programming for the Denison program. Same sorts of things in Marshalltown and Des Moines as well.
Oh, that's really interesting. So it really is a combination of support from different groups, local and university, connected to the communities.
And we have some grant funding, and you know how grants flow. They kind of ebb and flow. So something comes in for 2 or 3 years, and that's great. We're able to do some new and unique things. And then some of it is so we use the university funding and the community funding to sort of create the stability mm-hmm. across the program, and then use the grant funding, whether it's federal, state grants, to support the program, some unique opportunities, some unique partnerships. So we have some great partnerships with area corporations as well as government agencies, so that works out really well.
Okay, I think we have our technical glitch figured out. Javier, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yay! Thank you so much for your patience.
Not a problem.
So just tell us first who you are, what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, thank you for having me on this morning. So my name is Javier Tello. I graduated from Des Moines North High in 2009, and I graduated from Iowa State University in 2014 with a degree in mechanical engineering. And so currently right now I work at a metal fabrication company here in Urbandale, Iowa called Quality Manufacturing Corporation. And my position here is as a quality engineer. And basically what we do as a quality engineer, we're here to ensure that all the parts that we make are made up to the best quality possible. And what that means is basically I work in the welding department, and so we get all the child parts from the rest of our departments here where they laser cut the metal, and they'll saw cut it, press it. And so we get all the child parts, and we make the final part here on a fixture, whether it's robot welding or manual welding. So we have to verify that all the, you know, dimensions are met, all the tolerances are being met, all the specifications, and when they are, we make the best part possible. And when they're not, we look for ways of either designing improvements for the fixtures, talking with the production crew to see what they need to produce the best part. And so it's really a hands-on position. I'm on my feet almost 90% of the day. But that's a little bit about what I do.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought an engineer would. I always think of engineers just kind of sitting down, planning things. So that's great you found a job that's hands-on. It sounds like it's something that you enjoy.
Definitely, yep. I don't think I'd change it for the world right now. I think being on my feet all day, it really helps, you know, interacting with people and getting those communication skills. Because, you know, you have to deal with, welders, and you have to deal with upper management. And so it's pretty interesting being in the middle of both of those.
So how did ISU, and in particular Science Bound, help prepare you and get you to this point?
I think one of the best things that I think Science Bound can offer is at the point when we do graduate high school and we get to the Iowa State campus, it's not like a scholarship where they just, here's a scholarship and have fun in college. No, the Science Bound gives you access to the scholarship, but then at the same time provides a family, a support group. So that, you know, you have a group of people to talk to reflect on, you know, to guide you through the whole undergraduate process. And I think that's the most impactful for me. I know we had my freshman year when we first started, we have a freshman seminar that we all get to take. And in that class, it's once a week. They offer us resources for like studying. And tutoring. At the same time, they almost talk to you and make you reflect on, you know, your first year, second year, what your goals are for your first 2 years coming in, and how you should be, you know, setting up for the last 2 years coming out of the university. And so I think that was most impactful for me. At the same time, having those opportunities to talk with the high school students that are currently in the Science Bound program. And help them and show them that, you know, I'm here at Iowa State University. You can be here as well.
And so are you still involved with Science Bound? Like, are you serving as a mentor, and are you involved at this point as well?
Yes, of course.
They don't let you go.
No. No, and I don't want to go either. Yeah, no, I got together with a couple of five or six more alumni. And we started forming an alumni group. So it's an alumni society. And one of the main objectives we have with the alumni society is to, you know, come together as professionals and, host like conferences for high school students where we go with them to leadership development skills and, you know, down the road, hold a maybe career fair with our company that we currently work in. Our objectives are to also go to the high school and talk with them and show them, you know, if we made it, they can make it also. And so that's one of the most recent organizations that we've created to stay connected to the Science Bond group.
That's wonderful that you're kind of paying back or helping pull forward the next group of Science Bound students. That's what you see as part of the model too, Dr. Hargrave?
Absolutely. I'm not so sure that we envision this at the model, but when you have talent and mm-hmm. commitment and such great examples with Javier and many of the and all the alumni, but definitely the alumni who are available in Des Moines, and they want to give back. So I don't know that was necessarily my idea of the model or our collective Science Bound idea of the model, mm-hmm. but it's certainly a natural part. And great people to work with. Plus, it's fun for us, right? Because I knew Javier when he was in ninth grade.
To see his growth and
to
what
watch
he's become.
Him, yep. Yeah. And to watch him grow into not just developing the engineering skills and the expertise in that, which is tremendous, but just a quality individual who's concerned about more than himself. He's concerned about the community and ways and opportunities to contribute to the betterment of the overall community. So that's just a pleasure for us.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for being here. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'm sorry we can't speak with you longer, Javier. But thanks for calling in. And Dr. Hargrave, thanks for being here telling us about Science Bound. And congratulations on the 25th anniversary.
Thank you very much. Absolutely.
Yes, thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to all of our guests, those we just heard from, Dr. Hargrave and Javier Tello from ISU Science Bound, and our guests from the Ames Progressive Alliance. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows on our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Vincent Valeriano. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards, and you also heard Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.